Welcome everyone to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built. And we are a member of the 1012 Podcast Network, and you can find all the great coverage of the other Big 12 schools over at 1012network.com. If you like what we do, please leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Helps get the show out there. Share this with your friends wherever you found it, whether it was Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, anywhere where you find fine podcast content. You can find Kyle and myself. Connect with us on social media at Longhorn Pod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. The Longhorn Republic. Shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. I'd like to remind you also that this show is brought to you by our friends over at Charlie Hustle Clothing Company. They are a vintage-inspired clothing company based out of Kansas City that specializes in collegiate and hometown apparel. They want you to be the best dressed fan this season. You only got like a couple weeks left, so be sure to check out their wide selection of officially licensed collegiate apparel today and show off your school spirit all season long. With more than 30 schools to choose from, they've got you covered with all of your collegiate apparel needs. You can get 15% off any non-sale item by using the code TEN1215 at checkout. Shop today over at charliehustle.com. Charlie Hustle, vintage made fresh. Thank you so much for tuning in again this week. My name is Gerald Goodridge. I'm your host this week, like I am every week. And I'm joined by a man who's so glad to be done with Matt Campbell, Kyle Carpenter. Kyle, how are you?
A face that launched, I don't know, 1,000 quips. How's that?
Fists
could be. Yeah, that's better. Man, just one of the most punchable faces in the business. One of the whiniest humans in a profession that is littered with whiny humans. It's a different form than the Dabo, you know, like Southern preacher, get everyone to feel like you're the victim. It's just like a really whiny kid on the playground who no one wanted to play with because he just complains constantly. Like it's, I don't know, good riddance.
Yeah, for real. Glad to be done with it. Texas. Got it done. And, you know, 10 points doesn't really make it feel as comfortable as it felt. Kyle, I don't know about you, but I didn't really feel too much anxiety throughout this one. But Texas got it done against Iowa State for the last time, getting a measure of revenge. Dominant performance on the ground defensively. Great games from the ground. We also have some national competition happening. Cross country and soccer and basketball all were in action. So we'll down the 40, give you all the action that is not football related, but some championships are won there as well. And then we'll obviously close the show out with some bang the drum. So Texas came into Ames, a place where it hadn't won in 5-6 seasons, and came away with a convincing 10-point win that, again, Kyle, outside of maybe one sequence in kind of the third quarter, late early fourth quarter, it didn't really feel like this one was in jeopardy. Texas absolutely shut down Iowa State on the ground. Texas absolutely just did what it wanted to do on offense and got things done. And so, Kyle, I don't know about you, but I feel I didn't have my normal level of Iowa State anxiety going into this one, and it feels validated at this point that I was worried, I was concerned, but normally, like, I just hate this game. It ruins my week. I'm in a bad mood all week. And for me, this leading up to the game, I didn't have that yucky tummy feeling, and I definitely don't have it after.
Yeah, there's the 10 wins of it all, which make things feel quite a bit better, right? That's if you just fast forward to the outcome and look at the end of the game, you know, there's a way you can be a pessimist, an optimist, or a realist looking at this game. And I think the optimist says, look, we won 10 games. We keep finding ways to win. We're more talented than the teams we're playing every game. Only one time have we not followed through with that. So we're, you know, one of the best teams in the country. We deserve to play in the playoffs, right? That's the optimist view. I think the pessimist view might be a little bit more cynical of some of the things that happened in the game. Like, hey, in the second half, they completed a lot of passes, short, high efficiency passes. There were some things that we could have done a little bit better against a team that we certainly were better than to make it more than 10 points. We shot ourselves in the foot. Made some, you know, boneheaded decisions that took points off the board, yada, yada. I think the realist is probably somewhere in between those two, maybe trending more towards the optimist. And that's kind of where I am, Gerald, is there was a lot to like about this game. There was simply the fact that they responded, right? There was talk and chatter, and a locked-in, engaged Texas team came out and responded. There was the fact that they physically dominated this game in the trenches on both sides at the point of attack. That was the difference in this game, without a doubt, with injuries and skill position, you know, body count tallying up. The big boys, and even some injuries there, but the big boys stepped up and did their thing, right? And that's kind of my biggest takeaway from this and what makes me feel the best about this game. There was, you know, we could talk about it as we break down each of the phases of the game a little bit in detail. Special teams, I thought, was relatively flawless. No real issues other than a penalty, which, you know, we'll talk about, may have been cheap. But, you know, a little bit of nitpicking early in the offense, but I thought they adjusted well, called the game well, executed ultimately what they needed to very well in the end, did enough to get by. Defense, again, took one part of the game away, like we always talk about.
Completely.
Now I just want to see them. Want to see them kill a little bit when you know what they're going to do. You know, don't give them 6-yard slants, which replace a running game, right? Anyways, it is nitpicking. It is a team that this, with points taken off the board, could have easily been a 20-point win, right? That this was a team that never was in doubt, but also, Gerald, that may be our syndrome of having watched the cardiac arrest of the past few weeks, and it's like, man, 10 points, this was a breeze. But, yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you that this was the least stressful of the past few weeks, and it probably was because you looked up there and Texas sat in control pretty much the entire game.
As somebody who is a terrible golfer, the way Richard Johnson talks about, Richard Johnson splits on Zoo, if you're not listening to them, one of the smart college football podcasts out there, he basically describes what Texas needs to do is just hit par, right? I've never hit a par in my life other than mini golf, and that's what Texas needs to do, right? Just don't hit bogeys, hit pars, 10-point wins are 10-point wins. And especially against a team like Iowa State that, you know, really got off on getting off on Texas, right? Like, that was part of their deal. That's why their offensive lineman made the silly comments he did the week before to get them all riled up. And you know, we do have to mention, like, that was dumb. Sark called it dumb. And I love that they let the kids roast that dude. Like, the students were roasting him. The official Twitter account was roasting him. Longhorn Network was roasting him. Like, I feel bad because, like, he's a, you know, 21, 22-year-old kid. Like, he's a kid. He said something dumb. If you and I had to be accountable for every dumb thing we said in college, we would have much different lives. But I think, I mean, you know, run up, get done up, right? That's kind of how it is, right? Don't talk it if you can't deal with it, right? But again, I didn't have to be accountable for the dumb things I did at 21. But
you also didn't say I'm on national TV, Gerald. That is the difference, you know. Like,
that was local TV. It just went viral.
Sure, but you and I both appeared on local TV, and we didn't say anything that would go viral. I mean, not that viral was such a thing back in our day, but we both had a chance to embarrass ourselves. Like, we had a little bit of screen time and avoided it.
Fair, 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 fair. Anywho, so speaking of embarrassing it, let's talk about this defense, right? Offensive linemen decided to get a little lippy. And for their trouble, Texas gave them the worst rushing performance under Matt Campbell. You have to go back to the previous coach to find a worse rushing performance. Texas, 9 total yards. And the wild thing about that is there weren't that many sacks. It was only like 14 sack yards. So even sack adjusted, 69 feet of rushing offense from them. This is the best 5-game streak that Texas has had of rush defense since that 2009. 1.4 line yards per rush. 0.01 second level yards per rush. 3 inches, basically, of second level yardage per carry. Just absolutely dominated them on the ground. Tavondre Sweat, Byron Murphy, Alfred Collins, the crew did work.
I think credit goes to Trey Owens, who tweeted it first. Many people also followed up and put it on the social media. But Trey Owens mentioned and pointed out rightfully that Texas has more wins on the season than Iowa State had rushing yards at the end of this game. Like, there is something to be said about an engaged Texas team. And look, my goal this year, my hope is we play Texas Tech and they try to run the ball, and then we play Oklahoma State and they try to run the ball, because both those teams like to run the ball and just kind of, you know, their offense is predicated on some balance and getting the running game going and lining up and straight running at the teeth of that defense. And we've seen when teams try to do that, you can't. Dylan Gabriel with his legs did something a little different that's probably skewing Texas's season numbers, honestly, where they rank for the season. I think they're, you know, like top five, and they could be less if not for that. But just straight running back yards, they have eaten people alive all year. But again, Iowa State's kind of stubbornness, and to some extent Kansas State's in the first half as well. I think teams in the first half against Texas especially think, you know, but they... Yeah, Texas looks good on tape, but they haven't seen us, and we have something good. We have a wrinkle. Until they actually play, and they're like, dang, the linebackers, the defensive line, even the defensive backs, like they're hitting, they're coming up, they're making tackles. Like, you know, there's a point when, you know, give credit not just to the defensive linemen who've gotten rightfully so most of the plaudits this week, but when Anthony Hill, you know, dropped a dude at, you know, contact zero.
That like, was zero. One of the most beautiful tackles ever.
Yeah, literally 0.00 yak. Like a dude hits you and you just don't go forward anymore. You go backwards or straight into the turf. Jack Trice, it's nice turf, and he tried to bury him underneath it. Jalen Ford, a big third down stop, you know, where basically it was a good, you know, good head of steam one-on-one. Basically, he's sitting at the marker to gain for a first down, and Ford just plowed him. I mean, the rest of the team took him back another 7 yards, but strong play from the linebackers. And then, of course, like you said, it wasn't just the big two. The whole defensive line came ready, but man, those guys really just showed out in the pass game, in the rush game. Sweat, Murphy, I mean, they looked every bit as good as advertised. I love Sark letting him play too. Like, you know, you said let him comment after, but the mental thing of like, oh, they said that. Yeah, they said that. You know, you could tell it had been played so much
go
in their head because
be
every... Yeah, exactly. You're a captain. Stand there and look at it. The whole team is watching you, and I love my captains being my two biggest, meanest guys on the team. Like I love a team that does that. But, you know, they like, you know, the way that guys after the game were celebrating, were excited. Sure, it's 10 wins. Sure, it's, you know, their dreams are alive. But it was also that chip that had been put on their shoulder. And you know that the coaches let them hear those quotes over and over about playing in the dark and about, you know, all those things. And they... The best thing you can say about this Texas team is someone called them out, and they didn't back down at all, not a little bit. They didn't, you know, have a pretty good game. They got called out, and on that specific item, they had one of the best games I've seen in years, you know, on that specific thing. You called us out? Oh, okay, we'll show you, right? Like, I like that. That's nasty. That's what we need. We want that nasty.
Yeah, we want that nasty. Put it on a T-shirt. So, like, it was just... an absolute dismantling of what Iowa State really likes to do on offense. They like to be balanced. They got some in the passing game. You know, their Rocco Becht for his trouble, 24 of 32 for 323, two scores and an interception. One, like 60 of his 323 was that fourth and one pop pass that, you know, the Jalen Ford stick was going to be, honestly, I think the Jalen Ford stick was the play where like, oh, Texas is going to close this out. Texas is going to end it here. And then they got that big play. So, and again, still Texas closed it out a bit. But I think there is something to be said about Texas really forcing a team to go against trend and saying, we're going to make your freshmen beat us, right? And that was just on the Tortillas and Takes podcast talking about the Texas Tech game. And I think it's going to be something similar where, you know, Texas is going to make Baron Morton be the hero and see if he can do it. And he, you know, Bracco, the one guy has been able to do it all year, and it was the best game of his career. So, you know, Texas is really crushing it where it needs to be. They're now the tied for first on the in the nation for third down conversions defensively, just doing all of the things that we need to know. And it's just wild to think that like this time, like 24 months ago, people wanted to fire Pete Kwiatkowski. And now here we are with
Royals Award semifinalist.
Yeah, one of the elite units. And, you know, Tavondre Sweat and Byron Murphy go a long way to helping that. But I think this unit will continue to be elite in a lot of different areas. Tavondre Sweat blocked a freaking extra point. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But offensively, right, Texas played
Oh, go ahead. 1 second, real quick. I just wanted to point out, one of the things we've been talking about all year is Jahdae Barron is one of the best players on this team. And when teams... one of the reasons they want to run the ball is Texas in the beginning, probably for 6-8 games of the year, would pull Barron out and go with a third linebacker, usually Mo Blackwell or Benda. And then, you know, one of your best, probably two best players on your defense, three best players on your defense, Barron was coming off. In this game, there was 19 snaps where Texas moved Barron instead of taking him off to the boundary corner, and also brought in the third linebacker, which is something that I'm curious to see what teams try after seeing that from Texas. We've seen him do it a couple times out of necessity. We know he can play cornerback. We don't think it'll be his primary position, but the fact that you keep your best player on the field, I liked to see that. Jaron Thompson's interception, I don't want it to go without saying, Gerald, was an incredible play. He did give up that fourth and one pop pass on. It was his man who went for all those yards. But, you know, give and take it, the Chris Boyd tax, the interception was an incredible, incredible play. And then I'll just say this, not trying to rain on anyone's parade, but I do think I called myself the realist, so I'll say this. In the second half, Rocco Becht was 13 of 14 for 213 yards. Rocco was 13 of 14 for 213 yards. Three consecutive weeks now where the opposing quarterback has had 200-plus in the second half, all with extremely high efficiency that's led to these close games. This is the one watch point for the remainder of the season of Texas wanting to win the things they want to win. It's this, right? Teams try to run in the first half, and then they realize in the second half, okay, let's take what they'll give us. And what they'll give us is slants, right? Last stat, 17 of 19 for 170 yards for Beck on throws of less than 10 yards, 14 of those inside of the hashes. Those are slants. Half of his yards were just on that slant play. Like, there's a point where they just said, okay, Texas is giving us this. We're going to live with that. It didn't come back to bite us because Texas made some plays, made some third down stops, came up with plays when they needed them. But it is something to watch. Again, as high as the ceiling is on this team, that is a watch point that we have to watch going into future weeks. So what's left of the season, not much, but the big ones are left.
Speaking of big one, let's talk about the offense. Texas struggled in the first half offensively. You know, it was a defensive. They talk about offensive struggles or defensive battles. Felt like an offensive struggle the first half. But Texas got it going. Had a long drive, couple of long drives in the second half, and opened it with a 9-play, 91-yard TD drive that kind of set the tone. Quinn Ewers did Quinn Ewers things. 23 of 33, 281, two touchdowns. He needed to get rid of the ball a few times. Mm-hmm. And you put it in the notes. I think it's a great question. Like, does he pull the ball down if his shoulder feels better? I think there's a long conversation to be had there. But found Xavier Worthy four times for 77 yards. Jordan Whittington got his first first touchdown pass this year, a 21-yard one on that fourth down conversion. Gunnar Helm for a wonderful touchdown. Just absolutely great performance from the passing game. And I think this is the best, I want to say, maybe, that we've seen the passing game look in the last 3 or 4 weeks, where Texas needed the air game to set up the ground game almost. And so the ability for them to do that, I think, opened up things for the rest of the offense.
Yeah, and give Quinn a lot of credit, right? I don't think last year's Quinn battles back from the struggles. He was hurt, and like you mentioned, like, I think if he's healthy against those kind of 8-man drops with 3-man rush, he probably takes off earlier this year and makes a play, right? There's space there. He doesn't maybe get 50 yards, but he runs and gets 7. Great. It's a good play. Didn't seem like he wanted to do that and just felt uncomfortable in the pocket, happy feet in the beginning. He basically, you know, self-sacked himself 3 times, right? They gave credit to the, you know, the one gritty Iowa, you know, end who only had a half sack all year. He basically just kind of kept working, to his credit, was there, but Quinn, you know, scrambled or fell into him. You know, there was a point when it's like, okay, step up in the pocket or step out of the pocket or get the ball out of your hands and come back again, right? If you really don't like the look and you don't want to give the ball up, I get that. That drive that you mentioned coming out of the second half said a lot. And I mean, as good as Beck was in the second half as well, Ewers, you know, 10 for 13, 118 yards, two touchdowns, 203.9 passer rating. There were some things, right, in the first half. The fumble, we'll talk about it a little bit, or Xavier Worthy, you know, had a fumble on a reverse in the red zone. An intentional grounding call that probably took them out of points. A hold that negated a great scramble from Quinn and an extending the play, and a tremendous catch from Adonai Mitchell, which, you know, will still make his draft highlight, but probably, you know, the casuals will miss it. It was a great catch, great play. And, you know, all those points off the board made it look closer than it was, right? The whole, you know, you hate to see it, could have gone either way. I think the intentional grounding was probably the right call. They did bring pressure on that one and kind of just a dumb play not to throw it. You know, your guy cleared out by 10 yards, but fine. But like I said, the fact that all those things happen, the sacks, the intentional grounding, having a touchdown called back from a hold, and he ultimately played through it, locked in, and made the winning plays. Like, that to me is where Quinn is the best quarterback in the Big 12 right now. Like, he is growing into the game, where before it was, hey, he executes Sark's really good script. Look at his arm. Look what he can do. Look at him in RPOs when, you know, he can catch a defense, you know, on their heels. But now it's like, no, look at Quinn go win the game without their running back, without Jonathan Brooks, without their most dependable and consistent player. And I really love to see that.
And that brings us to the CJ Baxter of it all, right? Like, you know, without Jonathan Brooks, you and I had questions on whether CJ Baxter would be able to carry the load. And I think CJ Baxter did a great job of carrying the water for Texas. 20 carries for 117. There were a couple of spots where if he's a little more patient, he probably cracks one for even bigger. And so I think part of that's development. Part of that's him getting used to the position. But I think the more usage he got, the better he got, the more momentum he got. And he did get tired toward the end of the game. I think he fizzled out on that last drive where he got stopped for no gain two straight times to try to get 1 yard to convert. And then they brought in Jaden Blue, and Jaden Blue's kind of quick pop got him there. But overall, I think CJ Baxter answered the questions that we had. And again, you know, if they go up against, you know, whoever, if they have to play Georgia or Alabama or Michigan, right, in, you know, potential playoff or New Year's Six Bowl, that may be a different story. But I think for Texas's immediate goals of getting by Texas Tech and winning a Big 12 championship, I think he and Jaden Blue are good enough to get the job done.
Yeah, and look, it's we gave credit to him, rightfully so, you know, the best coordinator in the conference. I don't know, maybe Brent Venables has something to say about that. Still TBD, the stats aren't there this year. But right now, the best defensive coordinator in the conference is John Heacock. And we said that leading into it, and you saw it in the game. Even though they don't have the talent of the team, like you just mentioned with Georgia, it's a really tough defense to figure out. And I mentioned Quinn. Have to give credit to Sark on the play calls, right? I thought the calls to get the Whittington, the stock block for the touchdown, especially when they went hurry up in that situation, they had it in the bag on the terrible spot that should have been a first down. We'll talk about the officials in a little bit, but it ended up helping because it kept us out of the red zone where we can score. But that was a beautiful call. The helm touchdown was a beautiful play call. I loved him putting Blue in on that 4th-and-1, like a guy who's hungry and just wants to get it. Jaden Blue's only problem in this one as the number two back was, you know, he was too hungry, right? It's like that puppy whose paws are too big still, right? Like, he's growing into it. There's a couple plays, if he's more patient, you said about Baxter, but about Blue especially, if he's more patient, touchdown for sure.
That screen pass.
Yep. I mean, he got good yardage off it, right? I think he had like 30 or some odd yards in the passing game, but man, there was 60 right there on that play where the blocks just needed one more second to set up. But he's electrically quick. He can move. Like, we've heard, and Xavier Worthy got clocked at like 23 miles an hour, I saw on social media. He's fast. You know, you can make arguments for a couple other guys on the team. Keelan Robinson certainly in that conversation, but on game day in pads, Jaden Blue looks as fast as any player on the team, right? He looks electrically quick getting around the edge. But like Sark said, to see him do it up the middle, I like it. I like that he's going to grow into two really talented players, one freshman in Baxter and one really player getting his first real looks in college on a consistent basis, both of them growing into their game. And I really like to see that. But to me, it's the unsung guys, right? You have Gunnar Helm and Jordan Whittington being the difference in this game. Man, I love a game like that. Good on Jay Witt. He does every single thing right. Blocks hard, plays hard, makes plays, doesn't drop balls, like picks his team up, does everything right. That's his reward. And I loved it, man. I was so stoked for that play.
He deserved it. He really did deserve it. And I think, you know, there is something to be said about a guy being rewarded for being a program guy. And I think Jordan Whittington being on the receiving end, and not just the touchdown, but the 2-point conversion, really was a big deal for him. You know, and we can't tell the story of this game before we move on without talking about the offensive line as well, right? You know, I think Texas hit 3.5 line yards per rush. I think it was like 1.2 or 1.3 second level yards per rush, right? Only two negative runs. blocked really, really well. Jake Majors had an incredible, incredible outing against a massive nose guard. So I think there was an absolute, like, the offensive line, and I was tweeting about this earlier on Monday. When people talk about, like, Texas has always had talent. Not in the trenches, and not like this, right? Not since Texas was good. And even, like, I'm going to be honest with you, like, the 09 and 08 teams could have been a little better on the offensive line. Like, 04, 05, those were really...
Sure, sure.
Really incredible. Those are really good. Lines. Yeah, like, and this is that kind of offensive line in a lot of ways, you know? Those units had two or three or four guys drafted in the NFL, and this group probably has... definitely one, probably two and three guys that are going to play on Sunday. So it's a unit like we haven't seen them before. And they played really, really well. Texas 6-14 on third downs. A lot of that came because they were great on the ground and stayed ahead of the chains and kept things moving. The offensive line, again, created a lot of space for the offense. Just absolutely incredible performance overall. Closing thoughts before we land on our Potsdamus update, Kyle.
Gerald, the special teams, you mentioned it, the extra point block was huge. That's just Sweat being just, you know, there's a
being
reason
the best player on the team.
There's a reason he's in. I started seeing, I think On3 had him in their top 10 Heisman list, right? Like it's getting to that point where he dominates games as a defensive tackle, and just two adamant fans of the big men. You couldn't be more happy for the guy who comes out in a chain that says make him sweat before the game. His style and honestly his substance are both immaculate. Bert Auburn, unsung hero of this game, honestly unsung hero of Texas's steadiness and ability to close out this Big 12 season. He's 10-10 in the last three games decided by 3-3 in 10 points. Hasn't missed since Kansas. I think he's made his last 14. I think five of those in that the last three games that are, you know, 10 of 10. Five of those over 40, so not just easy chip shots. Like, he's doing what the team needs, and Sark feels incredibly confident in him. He had a little wobble early, and now you're seeing the talent come through. And then lastly, Xavier Worthy. I'm so upset for the kid. Like, you see him wanting to just get involved and make plays and touch the ball, and he gets bracketed or a block doesn't get his way where he can get going or doesn't, you know, gets a big hit right as he's catching the ball. Like, finally he gets a little space on that punt return, you know, makes the guy miss, and the Iowa State players just aren't quick enough when he changes direction like that. And when he hits his top speed, very few players in the country are quick enough. But man, broke my heart to see that one called back.
So that's a quick update of the Podstradamus. Podstradamus brought to you by Prize Pick. It was 8-6.5 coming into this week. I had Cedric CJ Baxter. He said after the game when they asked, which do you prefer to be called? He said, it don't matter. So love that about that action, boss. And then he had I had Texas at least six tackles for loss. So I hit on both. So I'm sitting at 8.5. Kyle missed on the 100-yard wide receiver. And we're going to argue this one out because Kyle said there would be less than a 10-point difference between the halves, and he's crediting himself with half a point. So I want to hear your argument.
So first of all, I said Xavier Worthy would have, or I said a receiver would have 100 yards. If Worthy doesn't get hurt, we know that he's getting that. So Gerald, I'm glad you're rooting for injuries there. But
if my aunt had wheels.
I'm giving myself a half a point instead of a full point. I think when I said on the podcast was that Texas has been a team that has come out offensively in the first half and struggled in the second half. And I said, you know, while I expect them to come out with some fireworks to open the game, which didn't happen, I expected the second half would not be, you know, would not be a significant drop off. And my statement was the delta would be less than 10 between the first and second half, between the first half points plus or minus 10 in the second half, which again I think should give me a full 1 point here, because there was not a 10-point drop off from the first half as most predicted and as Texas's recent play had predicted. So I did call this one exactly right, that Texas would come out and be at least as good in the second half as they were in the first. So instead of giving myself a full point because I wrote it down incorrectly in the notes, if you listen to the show, as all of you listened last week, you're nodding your heads fiercely saying, give Kyle the point. But I will settle for a half point. And also, it takes us into the Tech game tied, which is just scintillating television / podcasting.
I would have been willing to drop my half point. That was an argument I was willing to accept from you, Kyle, not giving you a half point. But no, it's fine. So yeah, it's tied. It doesn't it's 0-0 heading into Tech, really, is what it is, right?
Yeah.
It's 0-0 heading into Texas Tech, which is the latest that's been alive all year. So quickly, this win sets Texas up for control, or keeps Texas in control, I should say, of its own destiny as it relates to the college football, not just college football playoff, but for the Big 12 championship game. And so friend of the show, Brett Wilkinson, B2W, B2K, whatever you want to call him. But Brett Wilkinson, friend of the show.
Director's Cup Dates as well.
Certified smart guy, Brett Wilkinson, DM'd us, because he's way smarter than we are, and way smarter than a lot of people are. After the Big 12's basically useless update on the tiebreakers, it essentially said that if Texas wins on Friday, they're in regardless of anything else that happens. If Texas loses on Friday, nobody can clinch on Friday, and there'll be things that happen on Saturday. And if these things happen, then we have alternate scenarios. And so you broke them all down, built a flow chart, essentially, and got us the results. And so it seems like the only result that will leave Texas out of the Big 12 championship game goes like this. If Texas loses to Texas Tech on Friday, OU wins their game, Kansas State loses their game, and then OSU wins their game, that creates a three-way tie at 7-2, right? And so the tiebreakers comes down to OU getting the number one seed based upon all the tiebreaker rules. This is where people are getting tripped up, is instead of continuing down the tiebreaker spectrum, it actually resets and goes back to the top. And so then the tie between Texas and Oklahoma State would be determined by the record against the highest common opponent, which would be the Oklahoma Sooners. And in that case, Texas would be left out because they lost to OU and Oklahoma State won. So that's the scenario in which Texas will miss the Big 12 championship game. A loss by them, a loss by Kansas State, and a win by both Oklahoma teams. But again, Texas controls its own destiny, because you just win and you're in.
I'm going to laugh next year when greedy corporation personified half human in a suit, Brett Yormark, makes the tiebreaker fan vote or something ridiculous, where it's just
hashtags,
like pure,
or a Twitter poll.
Yeah, pure interaction driven, because, you know, the man is just grasping for dollars when relevance leaves him as we leave the conference. So I hope it gets stupider, because this is already so dumb. Thank you for breaking it down, Gerald. Thank you for breaking it down, Brett, honestly, for helping us take a look at that. To me, you said 0-0 for the Potstradamus. To me, this is 0-0 for Texas. I'm kind of excited that Texas has something to play for. We'll talk about it in our Tech preview. Like, they're going into this week locked in, and Sark said in his presser, like, you control your own destiny. Last year, they beat Baylor in the last week, but they had to leave it, and it was a bit of a long shot, admittedly, but in other people's hands to make the conference championship, and they didn't make it. This year, all 767 or whatever scenarios there are go away if you just win the game. So just win the game. Show up, senior night, home team, a lot of things to play for against Tech, and just win the game.
Just freaking win. That's all that matters. So we'll be back on probably Wednesday, Thursday-ish. We still haven't decided, but it's going to come out to help you preview the Texas Tech game and obviously the pivotal matchup. We knew there'd be a lot riding on this game going into the season, and now we know just what is there. Texas, with a win over Iowa State, sets themselves up to win their way into the Big 12 championship game and potentially a college football playoff berth. Now's the part of the show where we whip around the rest of the campus and we down the 40. And we'll start with the cross country team with its best finish in what, like a decade, finishing 7th at Nationals, led by the duo of Devin Hart and Roger Rivera, who finished 22nd and who finished as All-Americans in the event, becoming the program's 22nd and 23rd cross-country All-Americans in the program's history.
Hart finished 11th in the 10K. The important thing here, and Roger Rivera as well, was a top 25 finisher, which is tremendous. I don't think he'd run a ton of 10K before this, but just a good future there ahead of him. Devin Hart, I've talked about on this podcast a few times. a sneaky sleeper transfer, right? We talked about the what'd you name the one-year transfer who's beloved by fans award?
The Calvin Anderson Memorial Trophy.
Absolutely love that. The Mike Antico, Serge Jabari Rices, and the Mia Justices of the world. Players who come in, whether they're for a super marquee sport or not, or you see
AD
them.
AD Mitchell.
Absolutely. AD Mitchell should be in there. Lance who come Hanborn. In one. Yeah, let's keep them rolling. We'll do a podcast just where we name all of them.
Yeah.
There is some conversation that Hart should be at the top of that list. He was one of Stanford's top distance runners and transferred to Texas this offseason. That's a direct transfer for the Director's Cup favorites 1 and 2. You take him out without him. UT finishes 15th and scores 12 fewer points in the Director's Cup. This all is coming from at Director's Cup Dates. This is our guy, Brett, again, if you want to follow
all over the show today, Brett.
Yeah, big on you, man. Without him, UT, like I said, finishes 15th and 12 points fewer. With Hart, though, if Stanford kept him, they finish 4th and score almost 10 points more. That's a 21.5-point swing. This man is single-handedly putting Director's Cup points in Texas's pocket. Like, it's hard to think of one single player having such an impact in any sport, right? So give up the plaudits and make sure when we're giving our memorial trophy, our and memorial sounds so sad, our Calvin Anderson trophy, that Devin Hart gets his consideration and gets his flowers.
Memorials for somebody who's dead, right? What's the way the Calvin Hart, the Calvin Anderson commemorative trophy? Or just the Calvin Anderson Award, right? Let's just
call
it the
Calvin Anderson Cup. I don't know. Yeah, it's
the CAC, the Calvin Anderson Cup, which actually he's a military guy, so all about abbreviations. So first top 10 win for Texas since 2012, the 8th time in school history they finished that high. Great season, great on them. Great first year for a new cross-country coach for Texas, and it feels like it's nothing but up from there. Speaking of nothing but up, Texas soccer, after a come-from-behind win over Wisconsin in the round of 32, fell to Florida State in the Sweet 16, 5-0. Florida State's probably Florida State. The Seminoles are probably going to win the whole darn thing, so, like, they're really, 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 really good. But, like, it you know, for a team that was that talented and playing that well, it sucks to see the season end that way. But, again, making it to the round of 16, you're one of the 17 best teams in the country, right? So, like, just absolutely good on you. You could continue to build on that. The talent continues to come into this program. And so, again, I think just on the way up, just great, great, great. Great season from them and a great great trajectory these ladies have put the program on.
Yeah, in Director's Cup points, that'll be a 9th place finish if you make the Sweet 16, right? Because 8 advance and everyone's tied for 9th. 64 points there. But Mia Justice, of course, transferred from Florida State. We mentioned her just a moment ago. Couldn't stop her old team, but ends the season with the most wins of any Texas keeper, 17 in school history. This is Texas's deepest. They tied their deepest run in school history. Was hoping they could get one further, but they did come against an absolute buzzsaw. Florida State's 19-0-1 on the year. Only one draw to North Carolina. Away from being a perfect, unblemished season. Stanford's really good, so we're really hoping Florida State goes and wins it all, because I don't want Stanford Director's Cup reasons to win this. So Florida State is fine to win it. You also, okay, we lost to the champions. They're legitimately very, very, very good. But in that Wisconsin game, I mean, Wisconsin, one of the best defenses in the country. They came from behind in the second half, scored 2. One of them, Lexi Missimo, she assisted the other to Ashlyn Miller. With that, Missimo became the first and only Big 12 player and leaves the conference as the only Big 12 player to ever record 20-20 in a season, 26 goals, 20 assists. Those 26 goals tied her also for most in the nation this season. So unless someone passes her in the last few rounds, she'll finish as the top goal scorer and still top assist her. Like, that's crazy. She's having an unbelievable year, and coach said it, everyone said it, a tough loss to the best team that you happen to get bracketed up against is in a home game, right? There was over 1,000 fans, home atmosphere for Florida State. That's nothing to hang your head at, right? It's a tough year, or a tough way to end what was an incredible year. And the best thing about it is their two best players, all conference unanimous selections, in Trinity Byers and Lexi Massimo are coming back, and they'll be joined by their you know, club teammate and UT teammate MJ Cox, one of the best defenders in the country who missed the entire season. I said in our Burn Orange Nation Slack, I'm almost feeling like, as good as this season has been, I would love having MJ Cox, one more defender back there for that potent Florida State offense. And boy, was it potent. But again, I don't know that one player, we could have had her and all the other 11, could have had 12 on the field, and you still might have not have stopped a really, really good Florida State team.
They're just good. It's a buzzsaw. I think they're going to do this to everybody they face this year. They're on another level. But like you said, Texas finishes with 64 Director's Cup points. Great season for the ladies. Great year. They'll continue to develop. And again, Angie Kelly has this team moving in the right direction. On the hardwood, taking it indoors, number 15 men's basketball beats Louisville on a buzzer beater 81-80 in Madison Square Garden before keeping things close with UConn without its two best players. Texas managed to cut the lead against UConn, went down 81-71. Texas outscored them 38-35 in the second half without their two best players.
Yeah, certainly their two best bigs, right? They struggled a little bit inside, as you might expect. We're recording this on Monday. This game just wrapped up, so we haven't really had a chance to super deep dive into this one. But yeah, I mean, you see some of the things that jump off the page with the second chance points and offensive rebounds. I mean, you see where Dessou and Shedrick not being there hurt. No, take nothing away from Dylan Mitchell, who was very good, very, very good in this one, 21-8, filling in the inside. And Brock Cunningham played a ton. Onyema, you know, was big inside. It just, you know, they had the size, they got the rebounds, they, you know, they made the plays. It was a 6-point game. In Texas, I thought maybe should have had a foul call when it was a 6-point game to get it to a 4-point game with like a minute and a half left. That would have made it, you know, even closer. It got to free throws at the end and ended up being a 10-point game, but it was really a 2-possession game right down to the end. So give Texas a lot of credit for fighting without their two best bigs, and Shedrick coming off of 27 points the game before in that crazy buzzer beater. You know, you could feel his absence. He's going to be a big part of this team, hoping he and Dessou over the next couple of weeks really get to 100% for conference play when it will matter quite a bit. But have to give A. Smith credit in that Louisville game. That was a really tough game, and then to hit a buzzer beater like that, perfectly contested, to Louisville's credit. It was already like an 8 difficulty shot, and the dude played it perfectly, hand in his face. It made it a 10, and A. Smith just drained it. Big players make big plays, so love having him on the team. You know, as this team gels and figures it out, I think there's some more big shots in his future. Did also beat Rice this week, 80-64. Again, Hunter and Mitchell going off in that one, but a good little in-season tournament. Learned some things from it, but again, would have loved to see the team at full strength against a really good UConn team. That's reigning national champions and KenPom top four right now, Final Four team if the season ended today, UConn. So good measuring stick, but would have loved to see them at full strength.
But again, I think Texas, not at full strength, managed to keep things close with one of the best teams in the country, team that's probably like got a legitimate shot at a Final Four. So again, no moral victories, but Texas acquitted itself well against UConn down key pieces. But next up for Texas, Wyoming at home on Sunday, hoping to fare better than Texas Tech did against Wyoming early in their season. Number 12. Women's basketball absolutely demolishes Louisiana Tech 96-44. They were up 54-19 at halftime. Absolutely ridiculous stuff.
Yeah, and when I saw the, I think it was the same night as the Louisville game, and I saw Shedrick at 27, I saw Texas is going to be a big team, both on the men's and women's, because the women have been an inside-out team. Lori Harmon, of course, running the offense, but the bigs have been stepping up, and it was no different in this one. Taylor Jones led all scores with 25, 8 rebounds, and 5 blocks as well. Texas is a big, big team. We talked about it in our women's basketball season preview. As they get fully healthy as well and continue just to have more size than most teams they will face all year, there seems to be an identity crystallizing for Vic's squad.
Yeah, I mean, it's a Vic Schaefer team, right? Tough defense, create turnovers, 54 points in the paint, 24 turnovers to the tune of 41 points off of turnovers. Absolutely ridiculous. Next up, the ladies are going to spend some of their fall in St. Thomas nice. In the aptly named Paradise Jam, which is absolutely just incredible. But Arizona State on Thursday, High Point on Friday, and then USF on Saturday to get a little sun to close out their Thanksgiving break. And then finally, number five volleyball clinches the regular season Big 12 title with a 3-0 sweep over UCF. It was shaky. They lost their only conference game a couple weeks ago. Thought things looked weird, but Texas back on top and taking a trophy with them to the SEC.
Seventh consecutive title. Maddie Skinner with 20 kills and 4 digs. Jenna Winnes was 11 kills, was great. 16-1 in conference. Gerald, is there anything you are confident you have done the last 7 years consistently every year?
Gained weight.
Oh God, I'm with you. Unfortunately, we are as consistent at our lack of physical trajectory as we want it to be as the volleyball team is at winning Big 12 championships. Ouch, it hurts because I feel seen. We got this, bro. We got this.
It hurts. I blame. We're both happy, Kyle. We're both gaining that happy marital bliss.
Well fed.
Wait, right? But that's that brings us to the part of the show where we honor one of the best traditions in all of college athletics, Big Bertha, and we bang the drum, brought to you by Joe Ruiz. So, Kyle, what are you banging the drum on this week?
You know, coach speak serves a purpose, right? You don't want to give anything away. Sometimes you get roasted when you put yourself out there. Sometimes you see players adopt coach speak, and sometimes people show up for the interview and they're here just so they don't get fined. But it is a breath of fresh air, and it is refreshing when someone with media, but specifically when a coach, you feel them just kind of breathe and sit back and speak from the heart. And we're recording this on Monday. Steve Sarkisian did that today in this press conference. He was asked, I believe it was Anwar who asked him about the team culture. And he just kind of, you know, he asked first, how long do you have? I could teach a whole semester on this. Then he went in and gave a solid, you know, 5-6 minutes and went back on other questions and really hammered it home. And a lot of what he said, I mean, I think it's, I'm not going to try to recap his entire speech, but take 5 minutes and find that online and listen to it. It's a tremendous, tremendous speech, and it's a tremendous look at why Sark has been successful, right? I think it's okay to be a better coach. Like, there's a lot of people, oh, 7-win Steve, right? He's 10-win Steve. He won 10 wins. Like, it's, hey, mitigating factors at other stops, sure, whatever. He's always been a good coach, but I think it's okay to say all the adversity and trial that he's been through has made him a better coach, better human, better man, but that has made him a better coach. And also probably being in the Nick Saban school of things and bringing some of that culture and two best assistants with you helps him be a better coach and helps Texas be a better culture. And so when you ask what's different about the SEC, it's that, right? Sark talked about, you know, obviously the things you would expect, but also talked about creating a culture of vulnerability and love. And those are not words you hear coaches use, right? You have to be confident in your process. You have to be confident in what you're building to sit there and say, yeah, this team, it's based on love and vulnerability. Like, that's a coach who has gone through things, who has grown, done his own maturing and process, taking that and reflecting in his team. And look at what it was, right? A team called Texas out directly. And culture doesn't only mean vulnerability, you're nice, you're kind. It also means, hey, you call me out, we might just punch you in the teeth back, yeah. Right? That is culture. That is a culture win. Jordan Whittington makes culture plays all the time. Jaden Blue making that 4th-and-1 to me felt like a culture play when Sark went for it instead of kicking the field goal to seal the game out and put his 190-pound back and said, go get that yard, like run through that line. And he did, right? Like, culture is not just, hey, we're good, kumbaya, we're in Austin, pinkies up, you know, let's love each other, which I love that part of it. But it's also, hey, you've done so much, blood, sweat, tears, injuries, things you've gone through just in this year or the past 3 years, right? In this journey, for some people, 5 years, that this is now the fruit and labor, the fruit of that labor, I should say, of that work. That is the culture. The culture is you work, you show up consistently, do what we ask, do what you're supposed to, And then you get to celebrate. Then you get the fun stuff. Then you get to push people around and you get to enjoy it. The work is the process. This is the net result of the culture.
Yeah, absolutely. And for those of you that don't know, Kyle and I both do some of this like culture type E work for our day jobs. But like, I've always heard it said that culture is showing up to work, not for yourself, but for the person who sits next to you. And I think that's what we've seen a lot from Texas, where it wasn't just Byron Murphy and Tavondre Sweat that were frustrated and incised by someone taking a shot at the Texas culture. It was every single person on the team, right? The way that they celebrated after the game shows that like, this is a team that's unified. This is a team that really is pulling on the same rope in the same direction. And there's something powerful about that. You know, the best teams, it's not just the most talented groups, right? Talent's great. Talent's incredible. Talent's important, right? There's a reason why Texas is also really successful, because Tavondre Sweat, Byron Murphy are two of the most talented players in the country. But Texas had a lot of the most talented players in the country for a long time that weren't built like that. So it's just incredible to see Texas living up to what we want them to be based upon not just the talent, but the culture as well. So I'm making the drum this week and giving some credit to someone and something that we don't normally do. And it's honestly all about culture as well. So if you, you've been keeping up with Texas A&M athletics, they fired Jimbo Fisher, which we can make fun of them for that, because they extended him because he got lucky in a COVID year. And so now they're on the hook for $75 million for basically the rest of his life with no offset. If he gets hired by somebody else, they still have to pay him every red freaking cent. But this week they got they had ACU on the schedule, which they were allowed, which led to their 17-0 against in-state schools, lost 11 seasons tweet. But that's neither here nor there. They were up big late in the game. They just scored a touchdown, and they put in the 12th man unit, which is their kickoff unit comprised completely of walk-ons. So these dudes are guys that run scout team each and every week, get the crap kicked out of them by the starters. You know, that's what your walk-ons generally are doing, are your scout team guys. There to just hold pads, get beat on, and help make the starters better. And so unsung heroes, and they got in on kickoff return, and the stadium's hyped, the guys are hyped. They force a fumble on the kickoff, recover it, and they all get to celebrate. The guys on the sidelines are celebrating. It's just, it's a great time. And again, it's hard for me to say nice things about Aggies, but like, that's what sports is all about. That's what college football is all about. You know, the walk-ons are a key part of college athletics programs. And so them getting some shine just really made my heart sing and my heart shine in spite of the uniform they were wearing. Any other school, and I'm like weeping, crying, watching that thing happen. So I got to give some shout to them. Absolutely incredible show. Getting the walk-ons credit that they deserve for being an integral part of the program.
Yeah, I always hate when a program that you don't necessarily root for hire puts the right guy in the interim job. Like Robinson is the right guy. He's great. I hope they lose him because whoever comes in brings his own guy, because he's very likable, and I don't like liking an Aggie like that. But yes, you're right. That is culture. You know, Sark mentioned it this week, right? It's when five-star culture meets five-star talent, right? It can be kind of scary, and I think that's where Texas is and wants to be, and where Sarkisian has moved them. The Aggies have the five-star talent, but they have not had that five-star culture at all. I don't like this. I don't like when they do things that make me root for them, but that was a cool moment. And again, I think Coach Robinson is a tremendous coach, and I hope he leaves A&M with haste. Get out of there.
You and Dave Aranda go to different schools. That's all we've got for you this week. Kyle, where can the good folks find you on the internet?
Oh, you can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Carbon. You can also follow the Texas Pregamer at Texas Pregamer.
Follow me on Twitter at GH Goodrich. Follow the show on Twitter at Longhorn Pod. Facebook, Instagram, Longhorn Republic. Choose an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. We'll be back in your podcast feeds on Thursday or Wednesday. I don't know. We'll see how it goes. But getting this out to you so you can enjoy this as you fry your turkey, enjoy your turkey day, have a pass out on the couch before the game on Friday. Thanks so much for tuning in again. We'll see you on Thursday. Until then, hook 'em.
Hook 'em, Texas. Not afraid of the dark.